Also leading into the second feature on our program tonight, which has to do with this new documentary video that has been put out by a group called Rich Heap Films. It's called Black Indians, an American Story, and it's a 60-minute video with lots of testimonies, and I guess the main point of the video is to say that, well, yes, there is such a thing as people of mixed Aboriginal and African heritage in the States, and hopefully problematizing these very narrow categories of white and black and Indian, which really reflect hundreds of cultures. So it's very it's an honor to have the director of this, or actually the executive producer, I should say, of this video on the phone with us tonight, Stephen Heap. Are you there, Stephen?
I'm here, OCO, and greetings to all my Indigenous relations in Canada.
Great to have you here. So I wanted to ask you to talk about how you got the idea to do this project.
And I'm going to tell you, the idea really came from a strong interest that I had when we were in some research up in Oklahoma at the Oklahoma Historical Society, and there were stories and some information up there on the Oklahoma Freedmen. And the more I got into it, the more I found out that there was very little written about this. And I started researching a little more and asking questions, and finally came to the realization that this was a topic that was, had not really been discovered, that has been talked about, from family to family, for generations. But yet there was just nothing that really emphasized this other than one book that I know of that has been out for the last couple of years. So I felt like that this was truly a history lesson that I was not taught in school and wanted to learn. And again, the more people that I visited with about it found it of interest. So that's really kind of how we run the acid test on our film productions and on our documentaries, is what kind of interest is out there and how well can we produce it?
And people that you've talked with so far, do people have such a hard time accepting this idea that people of Aboriginal and African descent exist in the States?
Well, it's on the East Coast, and it seems almost from the East Coast working westward to the West Coast, the very strong interest in culture and history through the Mashantucket Pequot Nation and the Narragansett and the Seminole Tribe of Florida. And then when you get to the more central parts of the United States, you still see, the old flag of racism that used to be there. I don't think part of the five civilized tribes really recognize it today like they did 100 or 200 years ago.
Now, one thing I want to, as I said in the introduction, is really problematize this idea of the white, black, and Indian races. Can you talk about how your sense of people's understandings of those terms and your own has grown through the project?
Well, I was, when we started this out and started talking with people that had expressed to us that they had mixed blood African American, Native American descent. Those are the ones that we really wanted to talk to. And again, these were people that this had been passed down from generation to generation, and they knew that their great-great-grandmother was either from the Cherokee Nation or from Choctaw or one of the tribes in the central states. In the central states, and specifically around the five civilized tribes, and as the African American community in general, I think that a lot of people felt that acknowledging their Native American bloodline was somehow giving up their African American bloodline. That they were taught that, black is beautiful, we're African Americans, and that's what we are. But now what I'm finding is this resurgence that when this film came out, I would have people of African American descent pull me aside and they say, you know, we have been told that we have Indian blood in our family all along, and this just kind of reinforces what we've been told, and really that's how you have to go about it. A lot of this has been handed down from grandfather to their children, to their grandchildren, and maybe not a whole lot of documentation about it, but you know, documentation doesn't necessarily have to be there. You know, just like in the States here, to be registered or to be recognized as a Native American or an Indigenous, you have to have your tribal registration and a CDIB card issued from the Department of Interior. And Indian peoples in the States are the only minority group that have to do that. So, you know, I thought that it was, the more that I get out and talk to people, the film is being reviewed in the film festivals. I get phone calls every day from this great interest, people that are doing thesis, they're working on their masters. So, you know, as much of a resource as I can be, I'm more than happy to do that.
Yeah, one thing the film does is talk about some of the problems with the U.S. government and by extension, the Canadian government's approach to blood quantum. We're going to hear a little excerpt here and then come back and talk with Stephen Heap, the executive producer of Black Indians, here on Native Solidarity News.
Native people did not have a concept of race in the way that we understand it today. They saw Europeans and Africans as part of the same society, essentially. And consequently, there was not the kind of racial feelings or distinctions that natives applied to Africans that we find later in the relationships between Africans and natives. I think that's a really important thing to understand about early relations between the two peoples, because race is an acquired concept for Native peoples in the South, and racism is an acquired feeling. It is a concept and a feeling that's acquired from Europeans. It's one of the legacies of colonization in North America.
Another legacy was domination by European settlers. From the beginning, African and Indian peoples encountered each other under the controlling power of Europeans. And from the beginning, Europeans saw the alliance of these two peoples as a dangerous thing.
It was certainly in the interest of European Americans to keep Native Americans and African Americans apart. Such an alliance developed and maintained would have been very destructive of the European American attempt to conquer the continent. So African Americans were often used in the militia against Native Americans. Native Americans were often encouraged to hunt runaways and were paid bounties for the scalps of slaves brought in.
Yeah, that's one of the excerpts from Black Indians, an American Story that you're listening to here on Native Solidarity News, together with a discussion with executive producer Stephen Heap. And in welcoming Stephen back to the second part of our chat, I'd like to maybe ask about something that last segment touches on, which is the divide and conquer tactics used throughout American history. And and in particular, one thing that I was curious about that wasn't so much in the film was the use of black and Aboriginal people in the U.S. Army, especially around the whole time of the Civil War. Was there any thoughts that you have on that?
Well, of course, you had vast racism at that time. From the standpoint of African Americans going to wage battle against or with the Union soldiers, but yet they were even discriminated within the ranks of the government in the military. The Buffalo soldiers had their own units. They wouldn't socialize with the rest of the companies. So definitely, they were divided. Even they were here working or fighting for the country. You know, one has to wonder just how much their heart was in it.
Well, one thing that one section of the film talks about, the period of removal in which Eastern First Nations were deported westward in the Trail of Tears and so on, winding up in Oklahoma, and how the government's sort of you know, slotting people in one box or the other created situations where people might be able to, for example, someone who had both African and Aboriginal heritage might be able to resist deportation by identifying as African American, but then would risk being enslaved. And so can you talk about the I guess divisions of communities and families that are introduced by that way of colonial thinking?
Well, you know, back during the Dawes rolls around 1885, Senator Dawes, the Dawes rolls were created to register all the Indians around the country. And at that time, it was actually to your benefit to register as African American or black from the government standpoint. If you registered as a full-blood Indian, you had absolutely no rights whatsoever. According to the Dawes rolls, if you were registering as a half-blood or mixed blood, you then had more flexibility and more freedom. But anyone that registered as a full-blood Indian during that period was virtually discriminated against and had no rights. One thing I'd like to mention, you had brought up the Trail of Tears and the removal of the Cherokees to their homeland now, which is in Tahlequah, Oklahoma, up in northeast Oklahoma. Any photographs, and through my discovery of this, we saw a lot of paintings and sketchings of images of the Trail of Tears, and I was really surprised to see that in those images you saw no mixed bloods, you saw no African Americans, you saw no white eyes per se, but in reality the Trail of Tears marched all races, across country to end up in Tahlequah, and that were redheads. You had African Americans, mixed bloods. It was just kind of maybe the beginning of the actual beginning of the melting pot in the central part of the United States.
And with that, we're going to listen to another clip from Black Indians here on Native Solidarity News.
I call it like erasing the ancestors. Or even erasing us. They just want to erase until they get to the point where, you know, you can look and, oh, look, there's Indian Road and Sachem Street. And, you know, there's nothing left but the street signs and some cigar store Indian.
You can go to any place in the state of Oklahoma and every place, every few miles up and down the highway, depending upon what nation you're in, you will find all kinds of gift shops and see things, oh, come and get a Cherokee doll or come play some Choctaw or Creek Nation bingo and come and do this and do that. And you can go to every one of those shops. You can go to the capital of the Choctaw Nation in Durant or go to the capital in Tahlequah and you won't find anything representing the thousands of African people who lived there. Thousands, not just a handful or a few dozen, thousands who were documented on the rolls. Over 20,000 African people were there. They weren't just there and invisible and doing nothing.
My grandmother never really talked much about her Native American heritage. When I think back on my memories of her, the things that she did that I identified as being Native American, I think she did merely because she didn't know what else to do. That's the way she was trained. That's the way she was taught. But if you were to ask her to face those things or identify those things as being particularly one, you know, thing or another, she would back off from that. She never, ever really wanted to share much of it.
When I would go to the various establishments, there was a color line there. And one place that I went to, it was a dance, and we went in there, and there was an Indian girl who was at the desk. And she said, I'm sorry you can't come in because you're not white. And I said, oh, I know that. I'm Narragansett. And she said, what's Narragansett? And I said, a Narragansett Indian from Rhode Island. And she said, there is no such thing.
Throughout the 19th century, you get every few years a notice of the last full-blooded Narragansett has died. And the last Indian dies and dies and dies. And then by 1880, when hearings to detribalize them take place, part of the topic that is discussed in the hearings on this and part of the rationale for detribalizing them ultimately is that they are no longer, they are not authentic Indians, they are really Negroes.
The federal authority to decide who is what culture, what nation, that is one of the many areas of discussion in this video documentary, Black Indians. And we're just going to wrap up our discussion here with the producer of this video, Stephen Heap, from the Rich Heap Films Company. Now, Stephen, you mentioned during the break that you wanted to talk about some people that folks listening to the program might not have known in history have had mixed African and Aboriginal heritage.
Yes, as we stayed in film, and we only listed a few because the list could probably go on and on. But first and foremost, publicly thanking right here and now, Mr. James Earl Jones, who did our narration for the film, who is of Cherokee descent. Mr. Jones was such a gentleman and was so gracious to help us with this project, and of course, he is just truly, truly a professional. The Neville brothers, the kings of New Orleans, contributed their music, and we just had so many great people involved. You know, it's so hard to thank them all at one time, but the Mashantucket Pequots, up in Mashantucket, Connecticut, were just unbelievably gracious to us. They are so proud of their heritage, and they have such a beautiful culture and resource and museum that we had so much resource to draw from. And it really takes the myth away from Native American products or industries being second rate. If anybody wants to go see a first class operation and a real pattern of what Indian people should look at from the standpoint of prosperity and doing something right, it's the Foxwood Resort up there in Mashantucket. It's just an absolutely beautiful place. And again, they were just so good to us. Our writer, Dr. Daniel Blake Smith, who is a University of Kentucky history professor and also a Cherokee. And the list goes on and on. All the people across the country, from the Antiquarian Society and Museum to the Kendall Whaling Museum to the Smithsonian Indian Museum in New York and Washington, my sincere appreciation for helping us produce such a timely film. I'm really proud of it.
Some of the other people that the film talks about, Frederick Douglass, Langston Hughes, Jesse Jackson, Tina Turner, and Jimi Hendrix.
Cool. Of course, Jimi Hendrix, and again, the list does go on and on. And I think it'll even grow. The more that this film is out this year, I think we'll have more people acknowledging and really getting into the heritage of Native Americans.
So how can people get in touch with Rich Heap Productions?
We have a website, a dedicated website, which is www.richheap, and that's one word, richheape.com. Or you can go to any of the search engines, and it's really amazing if you go to the Yahoo or any of the high-powered search engines and just type in Rich Heap Films or my name, Stephen Heap. It'll pull up, probably 30 or 40 separate pages of information, different interviews through the internet, ways that you can order the films. These have a suggested retail price of $24.95 in the States. And I know that I've got at least three or four distributors in the Canada area that deal with the educational system that handle it. So we're real easy to find. Any major distributor knows of us and carries our tapes.
Stephen, thanks very much for your time this evening.
Adam, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
That was Stephen Heap from Rich Heap Productions.